This is the DTV Digest, the podcast that brings you news and reviews of films which didn't make it to the cinema. And now, here's your host, Mike Parkin.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the DTV Digest. I'm your host, Mike Parkin, and joining me tonight is Richard Hawes.
Hello, everyone.
This week, we've got four main reviews. We're going to kick off with Jake Gyllenhaal in the remake of Roadhouse. Then we have the Czech sci-fi movie Restore Point. A new Steve Lawson joint has dropped called Ship of the Damned. And then we join Dolph Lundgren with a couple of other familiar faces in Wanted Man. Our short shot is Vice Grip. And our DTV throwback is Solo, starring Mario Van Peebles. So without further ado, let's crack on. Our first review then is Roadhouse. A notorious MMA fighter is enticed to help out a bar in the Florida Keys, which is overrun by bikers and ne'er-do-wells. So, Rich, this film, obviously, it's a remake of the classic, was it 1986?
1989.
Patrick Swayze, Sam Elliott. Film directed by Rowdy Harrington. This is directed by Doug Liman, starring Jake Gyllenhaal, and also co-starring, was it Conor McGregor?
Yep, Conor McGregor as the in his, I believe it's his film debut.
It is his film debut, yes.
Which is quite surprising, really, considering you know how he's been around for quite some time.
Indeed.
But apparently this is his, I don't know if he's done cameos and stuff in the past, but this is his first sort of meaty role that he's ever had.
So this went straight to Amazon Prime, didn't get a cinema release. I can kind of see why. I have a few issues with this. I did enjoy it overall. I think there's a lot here to like, especially Jake Gyllenhaal. I think he's great as this version of Dalton. He's not trying to ape Patrick Swayze. You know, he's a very different character. Funny enough, that is one of the issues I have, is that he's too different a character. The whole point of Dalton in the original, you know, why he was famous is because he was a cooler. You know, he's a guy who can come into a rowdy place and diffuse a situation. So, you know, ordinary patrons actually want to turn up and go to this bar instead of, witnessing a knifing every night or something ridiculous. This one, Jake Gyllenhaal's character, his version of Dalton, he's just a brawler.
And it's not just that. He's internationally famous.
Internationally famous. Infamous, yes.
Yeah.
character. And, you know, he's not there to make things better, if you see what I mean. It's a case of fight fire with fire, as far as Frankie, the owner of the bar, is concerned. It's a very different style, whereas... Although he does something similar in that he his first sort of fight, he does manage to get the guys to leave the bar and come outside so he could beat them up out there. But in the original, he didn't even need to beat them up. I mean, the opening bit in the original Roadhouse is that he tricks these guys into going outside, and then he's got all his bouncers lining up, barricading the door so they can't get back in. but this is a very different beast to that. Let's get your initial thoughts on it.
Well, it's an awkward one because it's kind of, you don't want to keep always referring to the first movie, but by its very nature, it's inviting that because it's called Roadhouse and stuff. And but it is a very different beast. It sort of takes the bare bones of the original and just takes it in a different direction. And you know, how you feel about that is kind of, you know, depends on a lot of factors. I think also they've made this Roadhouse for a new generation, probably not worrying too much about familiarity with the old one, but at the same time, it's riding on the thing. This is a problem that this isn't the first Patrick Swayze film to be remade. I mean, we've already had Dirty Dancing and Point Break. There might have been others that I can't remember. I haven't actually seen those, so this is the only one I can really compare.
I've seen the Point Break one. The less said, the better.
Yeah. But the so it's awkward. And the funny thing is that going into this, I'm actually the film in the series I'm most familiar with is Roadhouse 2, because I'd never actually, I confess, I've never actually properly watched Roadhouse until I was before watching Roadhouse, before watching this Roadhouse, I wanted to watch the original. And that was the first time I properly watched it as a grown up. I'd seen it when I was younger, but and little moments had left impressions, like Bigfoot and stuff like that. But the overall film I hadn't really got. So I did watch it for the first time, essentially. So that was a really interesting comparison. I did really like the original, and I thought the remake, I thought some of the deviations were fair enough. They didn't quite, like, for example, the first one, it's a very nighttime film. This one is a very daytime film. The club in the first one is the Double Deuce, and it's a proper, off the highway kind of place. This is in the Florida Keys. It's like a tiki thing, like on the beach. It's all got like a straw roof and things in it. Although they've put in elements like the band, they have a band playing behind the chicken wire. Everything else is essentially very different. The dynamic, the whole point, the whole thing of Dalton coming in and sorting things out in the first one, and in the DTV sequel, which is his son. He comes in and he molds the team. He shapes the group. And in this one, he doesn't do that. He sort of goes, "Oh, you go over there,
It's
and you
very
do this."
half-hearted, isn't it? And the thing is that element could have been great. They could have really run with it because I liked those two guys, those two characters. I just wish there had been more of that sort of mentor,
Yeah, there's no team leader
almost.
sort of stuff going
No.
on, really. It's like
It gives him one hint, one tip is what he gives him, and that's it. And then
yeah.
just basically lets him, get on with it after that.
Because there's the moment where in the first one he confronts the guy, and he does that lean back thing when the guy comes with the knife. And basically in this one, instead of him doing that himself at this point of the story anyway, instead of that, he tells somebody else to do it. But later in the film, he does actually do that bit himself. But the so he's very passive for a lot of it, and for a guy who's there to stop to try and stop the trouble, clear the place up, he certainly lets a lot of people get hurt before he's actually willing to sort of get involved and bring, because the clientele in this version, apart from a couple of rowdy customers, it's absolutely fine. I mean, it's basically there's a couple of there's a group coming in and they're causing trouble, and there's a couple of others, but that's pretty much it. Whereas in the first one, it was absolute chaos. It was all over the place. So this one, the stakes seemed a lot lower. And also, I thought when they brought in the bad guys, their motivation wasn't exactly always well, it wasn't as clear as it was. I mean, Ben Gazzara in the first one, the really good villain, very interesting villain, and his motive, it's that whole kind of Western town kind of thing, and he owns the town, and the people have sort of, they end up at the end of the film, it's all like rising up against him. And in this one, there isn't any of that. It's kind of a, they're just trying to get the property or something, and it's like it's very quite
And there are
vaguely
much more,
presented.
yeah, and there are much more efficient ways they could obtain that property, or considering how many people he's got in his pocket, I'm
Yeah.
sure he could have got I don't know, got health and safety inspectors out and ruled the kitchens as being unhygienic and closed them down that way, or and it's sort of zoning council or whatever could come in. Building could have been, just not fit for purpose, or all this sort of stuff. It would have been so much easier to condemn it rather than this. So, throwing people, but I suppose that is his mentality, but there you go.
Yeah, and the yeah, so that going back to the band thing, which other people have said, you know, why do they just keep playing? You know, because it's like, why don't they just stop? They just keep playing. Anyway, but I thought it was an interesting idea that I guess Doug Liman had to say, okay, in the first one, there was Jeff Healey and his band who were great.
Yeah.
And I didn't really, again, because I hadn't really watched it properly, I didn't realize. So he's a real blind, white blues guy. And he, you know, he died of cancer a few years ago. But yeah, I think he, you know, his music and his contribution to the film was really good. In this one, what they do is they have kind of a rotation of artists I presume are all
local bands,
you know,
or something.
Quite real bands and stuff. And they sort of give spotlight moments to each of these little bands, which is a way to sort of mix it up. But the chicken wire thing doesn't quite, that aesthetic doesn't fit with this particular environment. Anyway,
it's a blues
there is an in-
basically is what it is.
Yeah, that's an interesting. Going back to that chicken wire though, there is an interesting use of that at the end when there's a big fight at the climax, and he shoots it through the chicken wire as if it's in a an MMA ring or something, like a makeshift, like a, you know, like an underground fight,
the octagon
kind of, like an underground fight thing. And it's just a quick moment, but I thought it was a nice touch, because say there is this UFC theme through it, because they bring in the flashbacks and everything, and Dalton is this guy, because there was a whole thing about them filming all these scenes at an actual UFC fight, you know, a few years ago.
Yeah, I remember
and
that.
And the I'm not sure how I feel about it. You know, that high profileness of Dalton, you know, sort of just that sort of takes it away a bit. And also, there's some interesting hints in those scenes of what's coming later in the story, because when we see the flashbacks, he's very much about the, you know, he's like a Conor McGregor kind of character. He's very much about the bravado and, you know, rah, you know, he seems like a real
arrogance.
Jerk.
Yeah, exactly,
he seems like a real jerk. and that basically he's trying to sort of escape that past. Whereas in the, again, going back to the original, you know, there's something that happened in the past. It's very vaguely recalled, and you know, it's not really touched upon hugely. Don't give into any detail. But he is trying to escape it, and he's very much sort of a Zen guy these days. That's not how this one goes.
No.
So you've got him sort of as a Conor McGregor character, but then you've got actual Conor McGregor, like we said, making his film debut. I think in having on the credits as introducing is a bit, you know, I know movies do that, but I think he's well enough known to not use an introducing credit.
He is literally a household name.
I mean he's huge. I mean, I've never watched any of his fights or whatever, and I've never watched any of the documentaries about him. I've seen a couple of clips of him, and I just thought he seems like he doesn't seem like a very nice guy. He seems like a bit of a nasty piece of work, really. And so I'm not really drawn to him, but he's very good in this. He very much goes for caricature, and they do some great stuff. To me, he looks like a really buff Ray Winston. but they do this kind of introduction where he's kind of walking around very confidently naked and stuff, which is quite funny. It's very OTT, all that stuff. And that is sort of a bit... It sits a bit odd with the rest of the film, because the rest of the film isn't as wild as that, but all the scenes with him are very, very wild. Some of it I really went with, and other bits not so sure. But I thought he stole the movie, really, I think, for his presence. I thought he was very memorable in his scenes and stuff. Whether he was always great in them, not necessarily, but you definitely remembered him. You know, he was a good, what I term as the odd job factor. He's not the main villain, but he's kind of the heavy that comes in. The funny thing was with this is the main villain there's ostensibly this son of this gangster who's the villain, but it's his dad who's pulling the strings from behind bars, who we never see, which is really odd. I thought we would have at least seen him, but because they kind of do loads of other movies have done this, I'm sure. But like in the Steven Seagal film Fire Down Below, he would be the Christofferson character who's on the phone to his son, and his son like, sort it out, son. You know, get it. You're supposed to be working this deal out and stuff, and then he has to come down and whatever. And in this, he's just just completely off screen. People have said, oh, is that because they're trying to keep it a secret for the sequel and all that sort of stuff? I don't know whether it's any world building thing. I don't know, but it was an unusual choice. But what was the other thing? So the villain's a bit weak, but Conor McGregor's a good nemesis. So getting back to Jake Gyllenhaal, who really is committed to the role, it must be said. I think they do a couple of things with his character that I think are a bit too, and it's hard not to be derivative, but you know, like you were saying about, you know, he gets the guys to come out of the club and then he does the beat down kind of thing. And he's sort of teasing them a bit. There's a little bit of a Steven Seagal kind of thing going on where he's like, oh, are you sure? It's like, oh, you know, but not entirely, but it's sort of not quite Dalton. He's a bit more Steven Seagal. There's a bit of a sadism to kind of some of what he's doing. Mm-hmm. But the thing that really came to mind was Jack Reacher. I thought this is a Jack Reacher scene for me. Mm-hmm. That's what it made me think of. And I'm wondering if that's the Amazon connection because they're both made by them. But yeah. I thought, yeah, they've made him this kind of roaming Jack Reacher-ish kind of figure. And then, I don't want to get into spoilers, but there's another sort of, well, no, I can't say it really, but there's stuff they do with his character later, which is interesting, but it kind of takes you, or it took me away from, it's a bit like those early indicators of like, oh, he's a bit of a jerk actually. You know, it kind of comes back to that. And it's like, well, it depends how much you're going to, you know, sort of stay on his side. I mean, he is ostensibly the hero, but he does some questionable things and there's definitely some stuff going on in his head. It's very different. One thing I do want to say is that I had a weird coincidence. It's not the only one this week, right? So right before I watched this, I randomly watched about 10 minutes of a Family Guy episode, which I haven't watched for ages. I just stuck it on because I had a few minutes. And in the episode, there's a whole section where they're talking about songs that name places and stuff. Right. And they mentioned Kokomo. And then I watched this and they played Kokomo. I thought, man, that's weird. Yeah. I was really weirded out for a few minutes because it's not like I've heard any reference to Kokomo for years or anything. It's just like all of a sudden these two things, you know, were side by side. It was very odd. And I do love the song Kokomo, going back to like Cocktail and all that. I think it was Cocktail that it was in. But I do like, there's some interesting soundtrack choices, definitely. And that's one of them. So where do you stand on this compared to the original and or as a standalone film?
Well, I think compared to the original, I think they kind of missed the spirit of what the original was going for with this. That doesn't mean it's a bad film at all, but you know, considering it's a remake, I think they've changed the wrong bits is the way it feels. As I said, you know. Yeah, the whole point of Dalton and why he was, you know, so renowned in the first one, and you know, everyone knew who he was, is because, you know, of his ability to be nice. So you know, I'm not saying they have to copy it, but they at least make him a bouncer, for God's sake. You know, at least make him seem like a good idea to actually have, rather than. You know, because it is a bad idea bringing him down. I just picked up an MMA fighter to come and beat up all the regulars. You know, it doesn't quite work. It's missing Sam Elliott by a mile. You know, that sort of character. But I like his proteges. That I wish they had more screen time. Well, or rather, I wish they had more screen time with Jake Gyllenhaal. Mm-hmm. That would have made sense. There's a bit of controversy about the use of CGI during the fights.
Yeah, what did you think of the action?
I thought the action was good, and I didn't really notice any CGI anything. I mean, there are some shots which are obviously CGI, like when you know he's getting a bit punch drunk and his field of vision is shrinking and stuff like that, and he got this sort of first person view. of what's going on. But other than that, I didn't really sort of see much. Apparently, it's a technique that's been used by Donnie Yen in Raging Fire and at least one other film, where you basically shoot multiple versions of of a punch or kick or whatever, and then you superimpose that with ones where they're actually hitting a punch bag at full force, and then you superimpose that back into the frame. So it looks like they're really, really going for it, when in fact it's that bit's sort of kind of superimposed. So I didn't notice, to be honest. I didn't really sort of have an issue with it at all. I just want to sort of shout out a couple of characters who turn up in this. So we've got Joaquin, what's his name, Demelda, who plays the sheriff. Joaquin de Almeida turned up in loads of
Oh
stuff,
yeah, yeah. He's
including
all sorts.
Desperado and
Yep.
loads of little things like that. But way down the cast list is a guy. If you've watched a series on Netflix called Never Have I Ever, the hero or the one of the unsung heroes of that series was a character called Paxton Hall Yoshida, and he is played by Darren Barnett. And he's one of the guys on the boat. He's the one who keeps getting antagonized by Dalton, like when he goes, "Oh, I'm just going to tell them that I gave the money to you." And he's going,
Oh,
yeah,
yeah.
and yeah, that guy is quite, he's quite young. He looks like he's only like 20 or something ridiculous like that. But yeah, it was great to see him in there. Just really sort of random. But yeah, and the ending, I wasn't totally sold on either. Without going into spoilers, it just didn't really. It hit all the wrong notes again. All his choices at the end just seemed totally wrong. But there you go. Maybe that's just me. What about you? Where do you stand on it?
I was, I think I lost in, I'd say lost it. I wasn't as committed in the second half. This is a 2 hour film. I think it's too long. I think I'd kind of lost my commitment to the film about halfway through. I didn't, I wasn't really enjoying, it was there. I was watching it, but I wasn't really enjoying it. I was feeling a bit disappointed. So I was, yeah, overall, I wasn't that happy. And, when it got to the ending and there's all these big CGI explosions and stuff, and I was just like, that, we don't, I don't want that from, that's not
You
what I
don't need
wanted
it.
from this.
No.
There was some stuff in, there's some different stuff they throw in here, like the, befriending a child kind of stuff that they have in these kind of films sometimes, which, funnily enough, that's going to come up later. But that was okay. I didn't mind. I don't think they did a huge amount with it, but they were kind of trying to
I
get
like
in
that character.
engaging with more
I like the
people,
character,
I guess.
although some of it was just so on the nose, wasn't it? Because the first, the original movie was basically a remake of Shane. It fits that sort of template. And this sort of is a kind of like a broken version of that. And, you got this girl sort of going, "Oh, it's just like a Western, isn't it?" And going, "Yeah." You don't say.
Well, that's what I mean. Yeah, and they're bringing in the kid, and they'll say the whole Shane thing was with a kid and whatever. I think that's probably where that's come from.
That's true.
But yeah, not sure about that. The guy who plays there's a member of the biker gang who's like a really sweet guy, and he keeps like going, oh, oh, maybe I've made some bad choices or whatever. Or it's like, oh, I'm just hanging out with these guys, It's like he's like the coward of the group, basically. And he's very apologetic. He doesn't want to get into the fight and stuff. And people have been sort of saying how good he was in that sort of lightly comic, lightly, it's not fully comic relief, but there's a little bit of a light relief from his character, and he's quite likable and stuff. And yeah, and he was that's play and he's that's Mo, played by Arturo Castro, I believe, who's again, been quite a few bits and loads of stuff in like The Menu recently. He was in had a role in that. Yeah, so the romantic subplot we haven't talked about, that was with Daniela Melchior, who, funnily enough, her and Akeem that Almeida were in the last Fast and Furious movie, Fast X. But she and yeah, she is once again a doctor. But she, again, I don't know. I think this was a problem with the first film. It's just kind of she's it goes from like zero to like to relationship in like no time at all. It's like they do the they work in the oh he goes to the hospital when he's got this, he's got the wound and oh that's the other thing. So Dalton gets stabbed right at the start of the movie, and it's just like he just takes it. It's like he's just like it's like he's nothing. He's just like oh I just get these all the time. But he's like literally like I
That
know
was funny.
that was something they do a bit of, they do I know that comes from the original, but it seemed like it was even worse this time. It was just like Jesus. It's like it's like it felt like he was really gonna die, but he was like he's I don't know if he was just not fast or he, whether he but his wound does get really bad, so at least they sort of that made more sense. And they were like oh you've really got to go to the hospital and stuff. And yeah, so they kind of and yeah she they go out on the boat and all this sort of stuff, and I thought it's okay, kind of I didn't mind it, but it almost it did kind of to a degree feel extraneous, like so many of the elements or whatever. It just didn't really 100% gel. I think it worked better in the original, but I didn't think she was bad in the in I thought there was some that whole bit, the bit where they go out on the boat and they're like in the middle of nowhere, but it's actually like a she knows the area of this like little island basically. So there's like a really shallow water, and they can just sit in it's what feels like in the middle of the ocean, and they're just kind of sitting there with a cooler and stuff. That was quite cool, but again, it's kind of the aesthetic that sort of sun-drenched sort of location and stuff didn't really work for me. I would have preferred. I know they've sort of gone for a different tone with this one, but I did prefer the, the small town, nighttime aesthetic of the original. Weather thing, did you spot the Easter egg reference to the Double Deuce? We don't have to tell the listeners where it was, but I was just wondering whether you spotted it.
I don't think I did.
Okay, well, listeners, keep an eye out for it. It is there. It actually turns up a couple of times.
Double
So,
douche.
yeah. So yeah, a mixed bag overall, I would say, but
I agree.
I didn't really like it that much, to be fair.
What are you going to
I do.
score?
I will say, sorry, before I give my score, have you seen Roadhouse 2?
Yes, and I
Yeah, and
really
what?
liked it.
Yeah, so it's got some really good fight action and stuff in that. It's I do highly rate it. It was one I wanted to do as a throwback, but it's very hard to get hold of. I know it's available on DVD like secondhand, and I think you can buy it in like double sets with the original, but I definitely want to see, yeah, because it's got some a lot of the stunt people now. I mean, like JJ Perry, for example, handled the action. There's Ellen Holman in an acting and stunt role in the film, and other people. I think it's Lionel Stovall works on it. Loads of the sort of current generation of like stunt people, they're all back in that movie, and it was like I think it was a real cut above at the time, and it's not really been noticed and sort of forgot. And there's some really good people in it, like Will Patton, Jake Busey, Jonathan Shake is Dalton's son in it. Well worth seeing
Definitely.
anyway. So how do I feel about it? I'm gonna go a six, I think. Yeah.
Yeah. After joining, it's definitely a six. So there is definitely stuff to like in here, and Jake Gyllenhaal is very good, and brings a different spin to the character.
It's a
But it
it's there's a drinking game in here, by the way, because the film's called Roadhouse, and they've actually decided to call the venue the Roadhouse. So they say Roadhouse like a million times. So take a shot every time they say Roadhouse, and you'll probably have a hangover the next day.
Absolutely. So there you
Sorry,
go.
I didn't mean to.
There you go then. 2 sixes for Roadhouse. It's currently on Amazon Prime. Go check it out. Our next film is Restore Point. In the mid-21st century, murder victims can be restored to life as long as their vitals have been backed up within a 48-hour period. However, a terrorist group is targeting scientists and businessmen connected to the company behind the tech, and police agent M finds herself discovering more than she bargained for when she's assigned to a double homicide. This is a Czech science fiction film. Plays out very much like a what I would describe as a Nordic noir with sci-fi trappings, basically. It's got a great sci-fi conceit at its heart. It's not the first to use it either. There was a series on Netflix called Altered Carbon, which used a similar idea of like, sort of having your vitals backed up, so if you get murdered or assassinated, you can be reborn, that sort of thing. But this throws in a bit of sort of a bit more sort of technical sort of background to it. The idea of like, oh, it has to be within a 48-hour period, because otherwise your body rejects the memories that you're trying to implant into it. That was sort of quite interesting. And then you got this terrorist group who's deliberately holding hostages for up to 48 hours and then killing them so they can't be revived. Sort of very sort of nefarious plan of theirs. And then we have this sort of, mystery at the heart of the whole thing, where she's assigned to this double homicide. She's told that neither of them can be restored because their restore points have been wiped. But then suddenly the guy turns up with memories from four months previously. So he's got no memory of the actual murder itself, just what happened up to a point of 4 years ago, 4 months ago. I really enjoyed this. I think visually it looks superb. Some of the buildings they come up with for this, the architecture is, suitably futuristic in this city. I don't think they did tell you what city it's in. They just sort of describe it as being in Central Europe. But yeah, there's some very sort of strange looking buildings. All the tech that we see looks suitably futuristic, but at the same time, you can sort of see the through route from where we are now to then. I thought that was all pretty good. And it is just a sort of solid thriller from start to finish. How do you get on with this one, Rich?
I was intrigued by, that it came up and it said, "Oh, it's a Czech science fiction movie." I was intrigued, but also there was a degree of trepidation. I was like, "I'm not sure what I'm getting to. Is this going to be very arty and stuff?" Because I don't really know much about. I think I've probably seen one or two maybe Czech movies in the past. One that I did see was very accessible and very, very good wartime story. I think it was called Dark Blue World or something. I'm pretty sure it was Czech, and it had like Charles Dance in it. I wasn't sure. Oh, is it going to be like, one of those sort of impenetrable, like some of the sort of Russian sci-fi that we've seen, like where some of it's, it can be quite mainstream, but it's also some of it's like really confusing and impenetrable. But I was really pleasantly surprised with this right from the start. I was really drawn in. I thought the aesthetic looked fantastic. It really has a good budget, good slick look to it. It plays out. It looks and plays out like any Hollywood movie does. It was very accessible, very mainstream. The plot beats, the narrative and the themes and stuff that it's got are also very familiar. I don't mind that. I think that's okay. It is, say, quite worn territory, but it's done in a good way. I see exactly where you're coming from with the kind of Nordic noir stuff, but also in terms of, 90s and 2000s, and actually even going back to the 80s, there's a lot of, these sort of investigative sci-fi kind of movies. I mean, we covered one a few weeks ago, the 13th Floor. Which was also a similar kind of, where there's this element of mystery and what's going on. Even things like I, Robot, were
Comes to mind,
doing this story, you know, of like, oh, there's somebody investigating, they've got to team up with somebody who's perhaps involved or to some degree is involved in the case, and you know, they're trying to sort of solve the mystery, and it all involves, you know, the future and corporations and all this sort of stuff. So it kind of plays out, you know, as I would expect, or, you know, I wasn't surprised how it played out and stuff, but I thought it was good. I thought there were some interesting ideas in there. I like the whole, you know, the restore point, the sort of backup. It's kind of that get to your, you know, save at the, you know, a save point on a video game thing. They've kind of applied that to this kind of version of reality. Say we've seen variations on this kind of future before, but I thought it was an interesting one. And the world building, the way they've set it all up, and the, you know, we see the, you know, the machines, you know, and say the buildings that they're in. There's, as you say, there's one building that basically has, it's like branching over. Yeah, it's like a wave. It's like a what they used, you know, remember people used to have curtain haircuts. It's kind of got like a,
like a center parting, isn't it?
Yeah. Like a center parting in the building. Yeah, it's like some really, I knew, so would that ever be possibly, I don't know, doable? I don't know. But yeah, it was all really good. The lead actress who plays them, Andrea Mohilova, I thought she was really good. She's very cool and calm and tough. She's got a very great presence. She doesn't actually, she doesn't get like big anger scenes or anything like that. She's sort of quite calm throughout the whole thing. But she's very, you know, she's quite magnetic. She's very engaging. I could definitely see, I mean, I don't think she's done much into anything. No, she's actually not done a huge amount, but I could definitely see her like in, you know, whatever it is, a James Bond film or something, you know, moving over to Hollywood. I think she would do very well. I think she's got a great look, and you know, she's very good. She was very good. I thought the supporting cast around her were also, which I know it includes some very experienced Czech performers, was really good. Yeah, really pleasant surprise. Say the kind of stories, you know, like I said, like iRobot. There's a little bit of, I can't say if it's close to Blade Runner, but I think Blade Runner kind of started that kind of future noir trend and stuff. And there's this has been described as a bit of a noir, but I don't think it's very noir. It is kind of more mainstream sort of thriller, I would say.
There's a French film from about 15 years ago that I was reminded of watching this, called Chrysalis.
Chrysalis, yeah. As soon as you said that, I thought, I bet you're going to say Chrysalis, because I did see, I think that's Clovis Cognac, I think, that one. I did, or might not be him, but I definitely remember it. It was released, I think, by Optimum or something. But
Metrodome.
Yeah, remind me what was happening in that one.
Well, there's two sort of different strands. You had a police officer who was sort of investigating these murders, where people had their eyelids, sort of these weird marks on their eyelids, and at the same time there was a girl who was in a hospital undergoing treatment. It was basically they were trying to imprint somebody else's memories onto her, because this daughter of the scientist had died, so they were trying to imprint her daughter's memories into another body, again, you know, against their will, sort of thing. It was pretty good.
Yeah, it was I think it was the first. I'm just checking IMDb. It was the feature debut of Julien Leclerc, who's got a massive body of work. I mean, his latest film is a remake of Wages of Fear on Netflix.
That's right. Yeah.
But he did the Jean-Claude Van Damme's Bouncer, and the film and TV series of Braqueurs, and The Assault and stuff like that. He's done Sentinel. We covered his film Sentinel.
That's right.
Yeah, he's one of the best. I mean, not everything he's done has been great. There was The Assault. I had some problems. I had some problems with that one. But you know, it was very blue and stuff. It was a bit weird. But he does like blue, actually. Chrysalis got a lot of blue. But It was Albert Dupontel in that one.
That's right.
But yeah, so there was a really interesting period in sort of that. When was that? Like the yeah, sort of
2007.
mid to late 2000s of
Yeah.
sci-fi coming from France that I thought was really interesting. So yeah, that's definitely worth checking out as and what was I was going to say? Yeah, so there was nothing else really to my say apart from say thinking that it's a very kind of a Philip K. Dick, but sort of the because there were films like Imposter with Gary Sinise and stuff, which were
Oh,
all
yeah.
kind of doing the same kind of character, but they were all focused a lot of those, a bit like Blade Runner, on oh, the character's going to discover something about himself, whereas this isn't so much about the character discovering something about themselves as it's more them it's them just sort of leading the investigation, but they do have a personal connection to it,
Yeah.
which you'll find out in the film. And I thought there's something that happens at the end, which I didn't quite get until about a minute afterwards when I was watching the credits, because I was thinking, I don't quite get what that meant, and then it clicked, because there's a little seed sown earlier in the film, and I thought actually it's a really good ending, but you've got to kind of be on the ball to actually sort of pick up on it. But yeah, there's a lot of really good stuff in it. I was very pleasantly surprised. I do highly recommend it.
Absolutely. And on that note, how are you going to score it?
I am going to give it an eight.
I'm going to join it on an 8. This is very enjoyable. Yep, 2 8s for Restore Point. Go check it out. Our next review is Ship of the Damned. After an abandoned 500-year-old ship appears off the coast of a small town, historian Elena and the local coast guard go to investigate. They discover it is not abandoned, and the ship's cursed crew have horrific plans for the intruders. Latest film from the
Prolific.
prolific is the word I'm looking for, Steve Lawson. Someone we always enjoy checking out, and doubly so this time, Rich, because for once he's not plundering sort of free domain classics such as Frankenstein or Dracula or the other ones he's done, Jack the Ripper, etc., etc., Dick Turpin. This is more or less an original story from Steve.
Yes, which is in fairness to him, is like a lot of his older films, or pretty much all his older films, were in that vein, and even some of his recent ones were not based on existing properties,
But they're all
not
just a
properties, but like
spin. Yeah,
characters.
they're a
They're
spin on
all
the
a spin,
character.
yeah. And this is kind of touching on, there's a little bit of that period kind of thing going
Yeah, I was
in this
surprised.
one, but no,
I
he's
must
not.
admit.
He's not.
Yeah, that's the other thing here as well, is it's a contemporary story, albeit with period trappings.
Yeah, which surprised me because I wasn't expecting that at all.
No, neither was I. But we get that drone shot over the village, and I'm thinking, man, those look quite modern houses. Yeah, there's rows and stuff. What's going on? But yeah, this was pretty solid overall, as usual. Great location that he's got to shoot in. Not really a lot more to say at the moment. Over to you.
Yeah, I thought the opening prologue. Is say it's very much the sort of period kind of stuff that we've come to expect, but then, like I say, it shifts to this contemporary setting where we're introduced to the lead act lead, the protagonist, the lead actress, Hannah Bang Benz, who's back from Wrath of Dracula, playing another martial artist character in this one. She gets to do more in martial arts in this one, which is cool. And so there's like a It's like a training sequence kind of bit to sort of introduce that element, which will come into play later, and also her strength and independence. She's quite up and coming, so it's quite I enjoyed seeing her back. She's got another film in the action vein called I Am Rage, I think it's called,
Oh, yeah.
which I still need to check out. Or it's called Rage or I Am Rage or whatever.
Yeah.
I've got it on my list anyway, but she's. I enjoyed her in Wrath of Dracula. I've enjoyed her here. It's another small cast, kind of closed environment kind of film, which is, you know, the style that Steve Lawson makes, with a few sort of exterior shots and cutaways. The ship setting I thought was really interesting. For the longest time, I was a bit frustrated that whenever they showed the ship, they literally like had a zoom in of the masts.
Hmm.
Whereas I was thinking, you know, come pull back, you know, show me the whole ship. Even if it's a model, I don't care. Hmm. You know, just show me the whole thing. And there was a point later where you do get to see the ship, and it does seem like it's actually, you know, on its way, you know, it's moving.
Yeah.
But for the most part, it's very much about the interiors on this. And I think I liked it. I just thought, I mean, the problem I had was, and I think this is due to my computer, and because it's not an uncommon problem, but the film itself is quite dark, and yeah, there were a number of scenes that I found really hard to see what was going on, or were otherwise just too dark to be able to sort of comfortably view. The whole film is very much about, you know, dark environments, you know, shadows, candlelight, and all that sort of thing. It's, you know, it's set in an old, like, you know, it's an old galleon kind of vessel. So, you know, they're not running around torches and stuff, and it's, and a lot of it's not daylight. So it's a dark environment. And unfortunately, that was sort of taking the edge off. But say, I think that's a problem with like viewing a screen or on the computer, rather than say, if I'd have watched it on the telly, I think I would have had a better viewing experience. Mm. But I thought the guy playing the lead villain.
Yeah.
I can't, I'm trying to look up which one. I think it was Ben Manning as Jacob. I thought he was really good. Yeah. He gets lots of, so, because these are very, they're hot. This is horror. This is a horror story, but it's very much dialogue driven. You know, they don't have a huge effects budget and you know, and all that sort of thing. They use it at key moments. You know, this is Steve Lawson's style, the way he manages his budget, and that can be, you know, you can get a bit tired of talky scenes sometimes, but I thought for the most part this carried it really well. I enjoyed the characters, the twists and turns in the story. It doesn't over, you know, it's again very brief. Steve Lawson's stories, you know, his films are usually only around 80 minutes long, and I don't think there's any exception here. And I'd say I really enjoyed that sort of increase in the amount of fight action that sort of, you know, peppers the movie. There's a little bit more than we'd usually, you know, we certainly don't get that in a Ripper Untold or something like that. So I did like that he, you know, he's got the freedom to be able to incorporate that element into this because of, the contemporary setting, you know, the contemporary location and stuff. So yeah, I enjoyed it.
Absolutely. How are you going to score it?
I'm gonna give it 6 out of 10.
Mm-hmm. I think I'm going to join you at the same. Now, Steve, who couldn't be with us tonight, he really enjoyed this. He said, "Nice to see an original story from Steve Lawson in Ship of the Damned." Although he did say in Shop of the Damned, I think it was his typo. But he did give it a 7 out of 10. So there you go, 2 sixes and a 7 for Ship of the Damned. Go check it out. Our next film is Wanted Man. Travis Joe Johansson is a disgraced cop given a shot at redemption by going to Mexico to escort a couple of witnesses to a shooting involving a cartel and undercover cops. However, not all is as it seems, and soon he and the surviving witness are running for their lives. Quite interesting one, this, Rich. Directed by Dolph, I think. Did he write this one as well? I'm not sure.
Yeah, he developed it with a couple of other writers. Michael Wirth, who's an actor and writer and director and producer and everything in his own right, and a guy called Hank Hughes also works on it. But yeah, it's been a long gestating project. I think they've tried to get, they took about, I think it took about 10 years to get made.
This, it kind of reminds me a bit of The Gauntlet.
Yeah.
In that, you know, I mean, in The Gauntlet, you know, Clint Eastwood is playing a pretty shitty character. And it is so weird seeing Dolph Lundgren playing a pretty shitty character. He's this, he's on the ropes right from the off because of this sort of body cam incident where he was roughing up one of a suspect and calling him a damn Mexican or something.
He's a racist cop,
He's a
basically.
racist cop. Let's not beat about the bush. He's a racist cop. And we get that scene at the strip club where they're hanging out. Him and the good old boys, and he's just completely unapologetic about his attitude and all this sort of stuff. It just, I thought, yeah, great acting. I can't imagine the real Dolphin anything like it. But good support as well from Michael Paré turning up and Kelsey Grammer turning up for a little bit. It was pretty solid overall. What do you make of it?
I liked it. It's very it's obviously quite low budget. It's very limited locations, limited cast. They try and make the most of the sort of desert locations and stuff that they've got. The number of shootouts is quite limited, but that and stuff, the action,
They're pretty
there's
decent,
not a huge
actually.
amount. Oh, very decent. There's not a lot of it, but I do think this is more of a thriller with with action beats rather than a like an action movie, because Dolph's character is kind of at times he's actually he's actually a bit useless, because he's not in great shape. I mean, they show these he, I mean he's they show him as he's playing a man who's aging. He he's limping around, he finds walking hard and stuff. And he actually takes a pretty, I mean, we're talking about Roadhouse earlier, and getting a bad injury and just sort of striking it off kind of thing. Well, Dolph's character gets a pretty nasty wound early on in the film, and he's pretty much laid up for quite a long time, and is
Literally,
and I
yeah.
yeah literally laid up, and he can't actually contribute that much. I mean, there's some interesting stuff about the situation that he's in, but during that period of the story. But it's when the action kicks in, it's other people getting involved, and he has to kind of do it as and when he can. But that works, I think. I thought all the stuff with, when we're first introduced to him, he's a bit, there's a say there's an element of the Clint Eastwood's Dirty Harry gauntlet kind of, cop persona there, but he's also quite likable as well. I actually, weirdly, in some of the scenes where he's talking and stuff, I actually started to think of Leslie Nielsen as Frank Drebin, and I was wondering, they're talking about this remake and Liam Neeson doing it, or whatever, and I was thinking, I don't know, I think maybe Dolph could do it. I don't know. I thought he could be, because he's got that kind of thing going on. Anyway, I need to say he's got a bit of, he's likable, even though despite his flaws, which I think is quite important for the movie. It's a protecting the witness story, but he's actually pretty useless at protecting the witness for the most part. And it's only really towards the end where he sort of gets to get, you know where gets into you know bit of bit of the, actually protecting the witness kind of stuff going on. The action when it comes is pretty good. There was one moment where I went, wow, it's like there's a gunshot and somebody gets shot at a distance and like gets knocked back into some fences and stuff, and I thought that was really well executed. And these kind of moments are not that common. I watch a lo load of these like Bruce Willis and Mel Gibson type movies and stuff, and they don't generally have a wow moment at all. So any wow moment is always notable, I think. It's a film that's, say, succinct. It's literally over in like 80 minutes. The credits run a few more minutes after that, but it's a very short film. And despite being, say, this sort of journey of this character who's it's essentially sort of a Scrooge kind of story to a degree. It's like he's a bit gruff and moody and doesn't really like these people, and then he's kind of put in the situation and it's actually his heart warms kind of thing, and it's like he's a nicer guy at the end. And I actually think it's quite a sweet film, really. I was like, there's a little bit of sweetness and charm. It's a nice moment at the end. I mean, yeah, I'm not going to give it away, but there's some nice stuff and dynamics with his the lead witness, specifically Christina Vila as Rosa, who is the main witness he's trying to protect. They have a nice dynamic. Kelsey Grammer, like you say, he pops up as well as Michael Paré, which is, always good to see those guys. And I love Kelsey Grammer. I mean,
Yeah,
he's so good in
he
all
really does
these kind of roles.
embrace the sort of like the DTV genre. Considering Frasier is kind of highbrow comedy, and he gets it, he really does sink his teeth into these roles, like in Money Plane and Guardians of the Tomb.
And even cheesy TV movies, he does it all. He turns up all. I watched a Christian movie the other week called Jesus Revolution, and he was even in that. It's like he turns up all over the place, and he's always a very likable, interesting presence. Even when he's sort of not that likable, he can be really. I mean, he's great at being a villain when he wants to be. I mean, there's a TV series. I probably mentioned it before. He did a series where he's like a crime boss. I think it's called Boss. And I don't think it ran very long, but I'd be really interested to see it at some point because I can totally believe that he'd be really good in it. Because he can do like comedy, he can do action-y kind of, he turned up in, he was quite fun when he turned up in Expendables 3, was it?
Yeah,
And
third
stuff
one,
like
yeah.
that. Yeah, I just likes it. So yeah, I guess this would be his second film with Dolph. I mean, I don't think he should, I don't know if he shared any scenes in Expendables 3. I think he was mostly with Stallone.
Yeah, it
But
was, yeah.
yeah, so this again was a nice surprise. I think it's very limited in its budget, but it's still a cut above a lot of the sort of DTV action that we've seen. I mean, there's some stuff that Dolph himself has been a lot of stuff actually that Dolph's been involved with, which hasn't been anywhere near as good as this. And I think it's good to when he's in the director's chair, he seems to be able to get much better films made
Yeah.
than the ones that I mean, there's a degree of, he's obviously got commitment to this as a writer and a director. It's like a pet project rather than something he's just signed. Oh, apparently they started in 2006 developing this one, but
All
the
right.
yeah, so something he's a bit more committed to. But all pretty much mo all the films I've seen that he's directed have been the best films that he's some of the best films in his recent filmography, films like Castle Falls with Scott Adkins, I thought was really made to a good standard. And then you go see things like Command Performance. So I think it's great that he's so committed, but not just turning up in the action movies, but getting behind the camera and all this sort of stuff in a way that some other performers just aren't. He does really seem to be like the Clint Eastwood of the DTV action movie, which I love.
Absolutely. Cool. How are you going to score it?
I think this is very decent, but doesn't break any real new ground or anything. I think it's a good time though, so I'm going to give it a 7.
I shall also give you a 7, and Steve also gives a 7. He really enjoyed this one. So there we have it. 3 7s for Wanted Man. Go check it out. Our short shot this week is Vice Grip. An influencer is subjected to violent nightmares and seeks help to overcome them. Pretty decent short, this one, Rich. So this is from
Dylan
Dylan Vibart. That's right. We've covered his stuff before, I believe.
Yeah, especially note the one that really stuck in our minds was Somniphobia
That's right. Yeah. Yeah,
from
that was
about
very
3 years
cool.
ago, that one.
Yeah, I really like this one. It looks great. Basically, I think visually it's got a great style, great look, lots of sheen. It's got a great creature, sort of knocking in the background, and it deals with that sort of like dream within a dream kind of situation, the lucid dreaming as it describes, except it sort of throws it on its head, which I thought was quite good as well. It's like, oh, you think you're in control of the dream, but do you realize you're actually dreaming now? You know, that sort of thing. So yeah, all worked really well. Nothing, you know, no real surprises with it, but I think it worked really well overall. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I mean, we see a lot of these short films which are essentially boiled down to one, usually a woman on her own being tormented by something. And I think it's hard to make that kind of concept stand out when there's so many other people doing the same thing. But this is stretched out over. Or it's told, I should say, not stretched out. It's told over about 15, 17 minutes. It's got a very decent central performance by Alana Spring as the central main character, Phoebe, who you don't really get much information. It's quite slight. It's like a drip feed of information because she's kind of on her own. There's no sort of big exposition dump, but she's on her own. She's in a very sort of plush, home with a swimming pool. She's clearly interested in social media. It then transpires she has probably made her fortune from social media. But she's very isolated. And I think the idea of the film is that the man of the what she's confronting is manifestations of her insecurity. She's trying to, there's little touch. She's looking out for the likes and stuff when she comments something, or looking out for what people say, and then there's the negative stuff that comes in, and that sort of really seeps in, and that's kind of what the darkness, I guess, is feeding on. It's that part, and she's kind of trying to confront that, and that's all she's trying to work through that in the dream. It's very Nightmare on Elm Street, it's very familiar in that sense, but I think it does a good job of it. It's not too far off of a Freddy Krueger kind of situation. The antagonist is not as chatty as Freddy Krueger, but is quite effective. And yeah, Dylan Vibart's a really interesting filmmaker. This is the end of what he calls his nightmare trilogy, or with. The second one was, because the first one was Somniphobia, and the second one I think was Don't Hide. Was it Don't Hide? Yeah, it was. And yeah, interest. He's a Christian filmmaker. His YouTube channel and stuff is very upfront and very kind of evangelical, and talking to a Christian audience about horror movies and other things. But he's clearly very interested in horror. And he kind of works in elements, but he does it quite subtly, I think. There's nothing. I think it's very approachable. This you wouldn't watch this and say this is a Christian horror movie at all. It just happens to be a horror movie made by a Christian. I think it leaves it sort of accessible to a broader audience, and not to. It doesn't dwell too much on any sort of particular iconography or anything in it. It's interesting. So I do. I'm always quite. I say we've only seen a few of his films so far, but they always seem to explore interesting themes and be made to a good standard. I mean, this one's got you just look at the poster and you just think, I want to see this. It's a very cool design, and say the film is interesting, so I would say go check him out. Subscribe to his channel. If you're not interested in the Christian stuff, it doesn't matter. You can just you can take it or leave it or something. But do check out his films. They're not preachy in any way whatsoever. So that there's nothing to put anyone off. I would say if you're not a Christian, he's not he's, you know, and it's not about he's not trying to convert you with the films. He just wants to entertain you. But if you, but there are some of his other videos. If you're interested to see his point of view on stuff, it's quite interesting, because there's one video in particular which is say, should Christians watch horror movies, which I thought was very interesting. He sort of kind of puts the case for horror, which obviously he's invested in because that's a genre that he clearly enjoys a lot. But he's very much about the types of horror, and so horror it has to have some value. to it has to have a point or something. So that's quite, I thought that was quite interesting. I didn't think I don't think it's a, amazing. It's not one of my top tens of the year or so far or anything like that, but I think it's very, very well made, good horror short, well worth checking out.
Yes, so we don't score the shorts, but we certainly recommend you go check them out. And you'll find the link to this in the footnotes below. Go check it out. Our DTV throwback is Solo. An advanced cyborg has a crisis of conscience and goes AWOL in a South American jungle, eventually befriending the people of a small village being oppressed by rebels. I was sure we'd covered this, but when I actually put it on, I realized that I've never actually seen it. I've never actually watched this at all. But for some reason, I had it in the back of my head that we'd actually covered it. But I absolutely love this, I have to say. This is probably one of my favorite Mario Van Peebles performances, because he does just allow himself to be this, emotionless, calm character for once. He's very much against type, usually sort of much more sort of bigger and broader than this. So he was really good. And then he got this supporting cast of bloody Adrian Brody and William Sadler, which are absolutely superb. I mean, that was great. So yeah, this is great. The location and everything, the performance, the special effects as well. His because Solo gets injured quite early on, and he's got this sort of big gaping wound in his side. I thought they did a really good job of like not only showing that, but also the electronics inside the wound and stuff like that. I thought that all worked really well. So yeah, this was pretty solid overall. I'm sure you've seen this before, Rich.
I did, yeah. So it's one of those films that I just kind of I remembered bits of it. It wasn't like what it's not like top tier like Dark Angel or something from this period. But there's bits of it that I was like, oh yeah, the when he's practicing laughing in the jungle, and
Yeah, very Predator that bit, isn't it? Yeah.
there's a stunt, there's a couple of the stunt bits and stuff. But it was like, yeah, I'd forgotten things. I'd forgotten Adrian Brody was in it. I'd forgotten about William Sadler. So it was like going back and seeing it quite fresh. And oh, Barry Corbin's in it as well. He's great. I mainly sort of remember him as basically playing a very essentially the same sort of military character, but in War Games is what I
Yeah.
always remember him from. But the thing that sort of struck, I don't know if it ever really struck me before because the film came out before this other thing, but do you remember what I mean? Way back, one of the earliest films we start covered on the throwback was Soldier with Kurt Russell, and it really struck me this time of how similar
They are,
they are. I mean, it's almost like they've really Soldier was essentially a ripoff because it's like,
Which
okay, I
came out
know they're
first
both.
then? Which came out first?
Well, Solo was 2 years earlier,
All right.
and again, we go back to the Roadhouse thing. These are riffs on the Western. So in both case, I mean, in the case of Soldier, he's human. But he's a very robotic human. They basically took away the android element and said, okay, he's just been conditioned to be like he's a robot. But it's essentially the same thing. This Solo comes out in the mid 90s, among a whole slew of post Terminator and RoboCop kind of efforts to sort of cash in, and I think it is one of the higher quality ones made by Triumph Films, a Sony company, and they, it's got a decent budget. Some of the action, it's got some quite cool action, but you say the fact that you've got like William Sadler in there as the villain, it really elevates it. He's always kind of one of those actors who moves between, higher budget and lower budget productions. And but the whole concept of him ending up in the I know it goes back to the Western, but in terms of relationship between these two films, they're both set in the future. They're both these sort of futuristic weapons. This is actually adapted from a book that was called Weapon, and he is the weapon, and he's basically not meeting the standards. in and they basically want to get rid of him. And in Soldier, they want to get rid of him because, you know, he's they want to move on to the new thing, and they just put him on the scrap heap, literally. And in this one, he kind of escapes, and they both end up in these, you know, rural communities with people who, you know, are not fighters, they're just like farmers and stuff. And, you know, and it's befriending a there's the whole befriending a small boy thing comes in again. And he acts there's a the same thing happens with him saving the child from a snake, as in
That's right.
so sorry, it's just the difference is in Soldier, he then puts the snake back down and expects the kid to
Kill
you
it
know
himself.
to attack, to kill it himself and stuff. So but there's but they're both using that that kind of relationship. The whole him coming, you know, to defend them or whatever. I know that also get all goes back to Westerns and Akira. Is it Akira Kurosawa that it all goes
Seven
back to,
Samurai.
as Seven Samurai and all that sort of stuff? They kind of all develop those same themes. So yeah, I think there's a definite Soldier, whether intentionally or not, definitely owes a debt to this film because it's just too similar at times. I mean, they both end with a lot, like a lot of these films do, with the, you know, fighting the new model. I mean, that was a whole thing with Drive, even, you know, Drive. It was, you know, Mark Dacascos has to face off against the new model, and RoboCop 3 did the same thing around the same time as this, I think.
RoboCop
So
2
they were
did
all,
as well.
yeah.
Now we won't say who is the, the more advanced model, but I was well impressed. I was well impressed with that scene when he gets off the helicopter and you see him and go, bloody hell. Because again, he plays it brilliantly. He really does. Dial it down. He brings it down to sort of, the cold, emotionalist sort of delivery and that. And I thought he was great in that role. Brilliant. Especially considering, what we'd seen previously. So yeah, no, I thought it worked really well. Yeah, I'd put this alongside, the likes of Men of War
Yeah,
and,
exactly. Yeah.
it's that sort of film, 50-50, that, all that. Yeah, thoroughly enjoyable. Great locations. I don't know where they shot it, but they've got those waterfalls and mountains and things. It just looks great. Thoroughly enjoyable.
Also in the cast, who I didn't know who he was at the time, and you know, he's kind of an actor whose profile's only really grown over the last 10 years, I would say, is Demian Bashir. Who was in the it was in Machete Kills and things like Godzilla versus Kong. He's kind of one of the lead bad guys in the movie, and he was also in Hateful Eight and stuff. But the you know, back this is what 19 say 1996. Like I didn't know who he was until like 20 plus years later. So that shows you, so how long he's been around. The film's directed by Norberto Barba. It's I think it was co Mario Van Peebles was a producer. His company was like one of those sort of key to making it, but he didn't, you know, he is a director, but he chose not to direct this one in particular. But yeah, Norberto Barba has done films like Blue Tiger and loads of TV. Including episodes of things like Reacher and Better Call Saul and Designated Survivor, all sorts of stuff. Very, you know, popular sort of director to sort of come. Doesn't do hot, lo lots of episodes. They seem to, well, with the exception of things like CSI and Law and Order, he tends to sort of come in for like one episode, you know, one or two episodes.
A
So
lot of
he's.
these characters do,
Yeah, but say he's not directed a huge number of features. It's literally like this is one of a handful. But I thought he does a good job. There's some nice visual effects moments, and the action's really solid. There was another weird thing, you know, I was saying earlier about the Roadhouse thing. So immediately after watching this film, I was mum, you know, umming and ahhing what, you know, what to watch kind of thing. And I was very drawn to watching the Dolph Lundgren film Agent Red, which I've been wanting to see again for a long time. And whether it was a subconscious memory or not, I don't know, but Agent Red uses footage from Solo. that whole, you know, the whole bit at the opening
Yeah.
where the landing strip action sequence, and there's that CGI landfall
Yeah.
after the explode with the explosion. Yeah, that whole bit is in there, and I was just thinking, is that just another really, really weird coincidence, or
Happening.
did I pick the film because I subconsciously remembered
Right, yeah.
that from like 20 years ago or something? I don't know. It was very odd, but yeah, they did recycle. It was one of those films that did have its footage recycled. It might have appeared in other films as well, I'm not sure, but yeah, I think it's very solid. You know, it's borderline theatrical. I think it could have played in cinemas. Its budget limitations are quite apparent, but it works with them well. And you've got a fantastic cast with all those guys in it, good quality action.
Yeah.
You know, if you've never seen it, go check it out. It's free on YouTube. I'm pretty sure the channel that it's on, it's actually on a couple of channels, but I watched it on one called Voyage, which I think is owned by Sony.
Right.
So I think that's you know, I think that it's a legitimate upload. I mean, it says it's a legit upload, but you know, sometimes you can't trust when they are or not. But I think it does seem to be, and it seems to be the full film as far as I could tell. I didn't notice any edits or anything in there, so it's well worth going to check out.
There's one really interesting bit where William Sadler's character is given like free rein to go after Solo. And he brings in all these bloody like CIA operatives. And it's very much like the beginning of Predator. Excuse me, I'm not in a cough.
I think there is a predator influence.
Yeah. Because you got all these guys, they're all in their suits and shit. You know, it's like the but really, really oversized sort of characters wearing sort of suits and Hawaiian shirts and things, sort of turning up as if they sort of won some sort of jolly. I just it is that sort of moment, you know, like when they get off the helicopter, and it all almost could be like a team like Dutch's team from then. But yeah, no, it just
Except
struck
you got William Sadler in full
me.
psycho mode, which
Yeah,
is great.
absolutely. Yeah, no, good film, definitely. Okay, so that is the end of this week's show. So thanks, Rich, for joining me on these films. I think we had a decent bunch this week, not a stinker among them.
Yeah, really good.
Yeah, so I think we've taken a bit of a hiatus for the next couple of weeks, but then we'll be back. Don't forget to check us out on Facebook and Twitter or X at the DTV Digest. Also check us out at the Short Shots, where we've got a whole library of shorts, loads of great stuff to sort of check out there. Other than that, thanks for listening. Tune in next time.
Thank you for listening to the DTV Digest. Let us know your thoughts in the comments and tune in again next time.